Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm Alistair Beckett-King. I keep my friends close.
And I'm James Shakeshaft. I keep my enemies' copies of the magazine closer.
In this tale, we travel to India with the comedian Sindhu V. And by India, I mean the very noisy back room of a comedy club. The sound quality is a bit dodgy, but we loved Sindhu's story too much not to include it. Keep listening at the end for a little apology from Sindhu, who, it turns out, got one of the characters' names wrong. She's really embarrassed, but you know what they say, everything happens for the best. Here's the story.
We should probably explain where we are.
Given the music.
Yes, as
listeners might be able to hear, there is the sound of comedy entertainment happening in the background and maybe some music, because we are backstage at the Bill Murray Comedy Club in Islington with the comedian Sindhu V. Hello.
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 And we've invited you here as a deputy law woman to tell us a local legend.
Okay.
Could you tell us what is the name of your legend?
Well, I've given it a name, which is Everything Happens for the Best. When I was growing up and it was told to me and my cousins and whatever, it wasn't told like, oh, here is a story. You typically had done something and you were complaining that it hadn't worked out, and your parent or your aunt or your grandmother pulled you aside and said, just shut up and listen to this, and then just started the story.
It's like a fable or something like
that. It's like an Aesop's fable.
Sounds like it's got a warning in it. It sounds like it's got like a dot, 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 like everything happens for the best.
No, it's literally everything happens for the best, full stop,
well,
end of.
In order to make it, I'll pretend something bad's happened to me, and then you can do that. Oh, I've just spilt my cup of tea all over my trousers. That's annoying.
That's such a small thing. I think you would be totally ignored by everyone in India if you said that.
I spilt my cup of tea.
Now, say that you didn't get the job you wanted.
I didn't get the job because I spilt a cup of tea on the guy in the interview.
Don't feel bad, because you know, you never know what's next, because everything happens for the best. Listen to this story. So, what are you doing laughing at my story?
It was the smile you did when you said, here comes the story. We knew a story was coming.
So, you know, there was a Mughal emperor in India, Akbar. There were many of them, but Akbar was he's remembered as one of the most enlightened. He is responsible for Urdu, for example, which is a mix of Arabic, Persian, and Hindi. Anyway, and he was just a great guy. He's an all-around great guy. One of the reasons he was considered to be so wise, et cetera, enlightened, is he was the first one of the emperors to have he had his 9 wise people in the court. And these 9 wise people, they were in and of themselves very important people. They were minor kings, they were poets, and they were from everywhere, from within India. They were Hindu, they were Persian, they were Muslim, it didn't matter. And they were called Navratan. Ratan means jewel, the 9 jewels of his court.
I read that because I read that he had 9 jewels, and I was really disappointed to find out that
they were real people.
He went to one, there was a desert land he had to get through, and he got the jewel from the ice world, and he got the jewel from, and like he collected them all.
Richard O'Brien's there.
Yeah,
I can see why you guys liked Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's like, at the end of everything, there's this big jewel, and some Indian kind of guy has got it. I never watched that movie.
I mean, why do you think we went to India in the first place? Because there were jewels.
And you did right. Hello, Kohinoor, still ours, but yeah. You guys have it fine. It's in What's Her Face's. Yeah. No, but jewels are a big thing for us. I mean, they still are. For my mother, it's still a huge thing. You know, when I was getting married, she brought a jewelry set for my mother-in-law for the engagement. And my mother-in-law's ears are not pierced. She's like an older Danish lady. And my mother was sitting, had all met. She was sitting there and she looked at her ears and she leaned very conspicuously, leaned over to me and said in Hindi, in front of everybody, what is wrong with her ears? Why are they not pierced? But in Hindi. And I was like, mommy, you're so funny. And then she said, you want to come with me to kitchen? So we went into the kitchen and she said to me, does she have that disease that when you bleed, you die? I said, no. No, she's like, well, why are her ears not pierced? I'm like, Ma, over here they don't do it as a thing. She's like, oh, God. Okay, I have brought her the very beautiful ruby set, but it's okay, she'll give it to you. Okay, chalo, whatever happens, happens for the best.
You have so neatly brought us back to the story.
Brought you back to the story. So,
so
he had these 9 jewels. Now, they were all very wise and very accomplished in their own right. But the one that he was most fond of is, for lack of a better translation, think of him as the court jester. His name was Babar. And he was, they say that he was of a Sikh extraction, but we don't really know, but that's what we go with. In India, you have these comics called Amar Chitra Katha, which is, Amar means immortal, Chitra, photograph, picture, Katha, stories. So they're all the stories of our traditions from every single angle, you know, Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, whatever, Sufi, and they're these comic books. And so when you were growing up, you would buy one and it would be like the only thing you had for 6 months, and you would go to your friend's house, you traded them. They were only full of stories about our folklore, basically. So in that, he was a sardar, a Sikh. So as far as you're concerned, he's a Sikh, all right? And so Babur was his favorite. And one time, Akbar had gone out for a hunt. He wanted to go out for a hunt, and it was getting to be evening. So because he was called Jahapana, which is emperor of the universe. So Jahapana, you know, he went with a big entourage, and he was a big hunter, and Babur went with him. And Babur was sort of iffy about hunting, about being out on a horse for so long, blah, blah. But he's like, I got to go, it's Jahapana, whatever. So they went. And then it got to be evening, and all the Akbar's people said, we need to go back. And Babur was like, sir, we need to go back. And Akbar was like, I'm not going back. I haven't got a stag yet. This was like an original stag do, but a very different kind of connotation, I suppose. Anyway, so they were hunting, and then they found a stag, and the light wasn't good. So Akbar took out his bow and arrow really carefully, and he got it ready, and he was about to take a shot, but because the light wasn't good, he missed. And he let his... Have you ever done bow and arrow?
No.
Yes.
You know how they're quite jagged, and if you let them go before you're ready, they have to go right past your thumb. Mm. And what you do when you have to let them go, my mom taught me this, what you have to do when you let you go is you have to sort of move your thumb and then let them go, otherwise they'll take off the side of your thumb.
Oh.
And he let it go before, and he cut the side of his thumb, and he was in pain and furious. And the moment it happened, he said, oh my God, the stag got away. And just then Babur said, oh my Lord, don't worry, Jahapana, whatever happens, happens for the best. Well, it would be not incorrect to say this is not what Akbar wanted to hear. He was tired. He was, you know, emperor of the universe. He didn't need this dweeb saying this.
Listen, Babur, I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm the emperor of the universe. Which is stressful enough.
Enough. And I expect...
I'm just about my thumb.
Yeah, no, but that didn't come up. And then he said... And I've hurt my thumb. I'm really upset. I missed the stag. I've hurt my thumb. How dare you? And Babur held his ground. And this is why Akbar liked him. Babur was the only one that used to say to Akbar what he thought, which no one ever did because they didn't want their head lopped off. Because no matter how enlightened emperors of the universe are, they've got a bit of Kim Il-jong in them as well, you know. They will just be like, no, I didn't like that. Take off his head. So he got so aggravated because Babur said, I know, my lord, I'm sorry about your thumb, but whatever happens, happens for the best. Now let's go back.
We doubled down.
And Akbar said, go back. There's only one place you're going, which is to your death. All right, I'm going back. So he called his people and he said, string him up upside down from a banyan tree. Banyan trees are very tall. Because the way you die that way is your blood eventually just keeps rushing into your head, and then your eyeballs pop up.
Ooh.
It's a way, it's very painful. Yeah, it's very slow and painful. Ooh, yeah. I mean,
but it's got quite a fun end.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it's, and it also gives you time. That way of execution, they say, gives a person time to think about what they've done wrong.
Mm.
Certainly it does.
And the oxygen to the brain they need.
Yeah, for example, to really contemplate in a deep state. Anyway, so Babur at this point was like, you know, he wasn't past begging for his life. He was like, oh no, really, please, whatever. Akbar was like, I don't want to hear from you. And all the other guys were like, Babur, shut up, because we're all going to get killed. So they strung him up and they latkaoed him. They hung, he was dangling. And Akbar said, we're off, let's go. Now, it had become very dark. Now, one of the things that is very pertinent to this story is, in India, or in the subcontinent at the time, there was the mainstream government, as there is. And even in the Mahabharata, which is 5,000 years old, and it's a religious myth, you know. Even there, you had mainstream governance, mainstream law and order. Then you had the Bhils. Bhils were tribals. They were always outside the purview of whatever you thought was law or religion. They did their own thing. And they lived in the forest. They didn't come out. They didn't mess. But you didn't mess with them. Even Jahapana couldn't mess with them because they were forest people. You can find them. They knew the ways of the forest. And these were dense forests. They were like literally like littered with tigers and snakes and stuff. Big time. No one wanted to mess with the Bheels. And the Bheels were interesting. It's so interesting to me that they exist through thousands of years of Indian folklore and history and mythology as a people that just didn't adhere to what was mainstream. They were harmless until you messed with them, which is, I think, the best time to harm someone is when they're messing with you. Otherwise, don't harm them, you know. So Akbar and his people went back, but it was dark and Akbar got separated. He got lost and he got caught by the Bheels. And the Bheels were like, this is great. We've got one of you guys. And he tried to show his ring, his imperial ring. And they were like, they didn't care. And they said, it's time for a sacrifice to the gods. And we need a sacrifice and we've been waiting. You're the sacrifice. They made a big cauldron, I suppose, filled it with hot oil and said, you're going in there. But before we give the sacrifice, which I also understand, because when I do my prayers, you have to wash all the fruit. They were like, we need to wash this guy. So they went and he was screaming and saying, I'm the emperor of the universe. I'm this. They were like, dude, whatever. And they were bathing him and cleaning him. And as they came to clean every part of his body, they saw that his thumb was cut. And they said, oh, we can't give, because you can never give a flower that's been smelt, food that's been tasted, or a fruit that's bruised to the gods. I can't even now. You know, so sometimes you send the kids out to pluck a flower to put in the puja. And I'm like, don't smell it. And they're like, but why, mama? I'm like, dude, just don't do it. We have one flower. It's November. Don't smell it. Similarly, you could not give a human being, you know, if you were doing puja and you needed to sacrifice a human being, you wouldn't give one that had a fresh cut. So they were like, oh, we can't believe, so lame. So they slapped him around a bit and said, get out. So he left. And as he was running through the forest, presumably with some underpants or something, because this is India. No one's ever naked. Like, literally no one's ever naked. When I was having my first child and my obstetrician was a man, my mother said, cannot have the child through the underpanties. And I said, but I won't. She said, oh, he will see you naked. I'm like, exactly. This is a very bad thing. She could. That was her big thing, was, are you going to have the kid through your underpants? Because it's a man. She just couldn't conceive.
A full suit, a full pantsuit.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so he ran through the forest. And as he was running, he thought, Babar was right. I cut my thumb and it saved my life. Everything happens for the best. And he thought, oh, my friend Babar, you have never, ever let me down. You've always given me good advice. And now I've strung you up somewhere and you're probably dead. So he actually doesn't go back to his palace. He roams the forest, roams, also hiding from the Bheels, although he's quite sure he'll be fine because he's like, hello, look at my thumb. And he finds Babar, who's semi-conscious. So he's so humble in his friendship to Babar that he climbs the tree, cuts the rope, maybe with his teeth. They don't tell you in the comic. And then Babar falls to the ground and he, you know, whatever, slaps him and says, wake up, wake up. He gives him some water. Babar comes out of his semi-coma and he says, Babar, you were right. You're right. And he tells him the story. And he's like, you were right. Everything does happen for the best. Look at my thumb. Will you ever forgive me for what I've done to you? And Babar says, I don't have to forgive you because what happened to me is also shows that everything happens for the best. And Akbar said, you know, I don't even know why you would say that. Are you trying to shame me again? He said, no, Jhapana, because if you hadn't left me here, we would have been lost together because they always rode together. And they would have found you damaged, but not me. I don't have any cuts and I would have been sacrificed to the gods. So everything happens for the best.
I nearly applauded.
That's a good story, right?
It's a great story. Now, when you sent the link, I Googled this, and there is, I watched an animation in, I apologize for not knowing which Indian language.
Probably Hindi.
But it was quite racist, like, in its depiction, because, like, the emperor character is so white. He looks like a mortgage advisor from Buckinghamshire.
Uh-huh.
it looks like his name is Simon Anderson, or something like that. And whereas Baba is a little bit tanned, but like the tribe person is like green. That's they've got like the colours are insane. Like they've really drawn a really.
When you say that the depictions are racist, is that just because the skin colours are different?
What I mean is it seems to me to be followed. It was very cheap animation. Like when there are horses, they don't show the legs. Like they keep riding around.
Of course.
And short perfectly framed so they don't have to do the leg movement. What I mean is it has the Disney Aladdin thing of if you're the hero, then you look like a white American. And if you're the bad guy, then you look like a person from wherever this is set.
I see.
So but that said, India has its own version of colour-based...
well, yes, but also India has so many races that if you're reading a comic about some things, some of the people are more fair than the other ones, and that's okay. They're just different.
Yeah.
So, but for example, in India, so it could be, I mean, who knows, but Babur was a Persian, effectively. If Babur was a Sikh, he would have been more tanned. Mm. And the tribals are genuinely dark. They're outside all the time. My dad's a South Indian, and they're Dravidians. So they're totally different than the North. So he's super dark, super dark, super dark. So when you read comics in India, from the South, if they tried to neutralize the color, you'd never know what was going on. You'd be like, that person would never live here. Because India in that way, you have different parts of India living. My mother's a North Indian. She's probably your color, but a little bit more tanned because she lives in India.
Just for clarity, you're pointing at James there. Not me, the ginger one.
My mother loves you. You know that. Can I just tell this story?
Tell the story.
We did a competition together and Alistair won very deservedly, but he was so generous in the interview about it that he said, oh, you know, because I had done well as well. And he said, oh, you know, she did so well. I thought she should have got it. So I was showing my mother and my mother never commented on his looks or anything. And then as he said that, she said, oh, he's not only looking, but he's behaving like a real Jesus. I love him. When I meet him, I will kiss him. I'm like, no, don't do that. She loves Alistair. And so, you know, so I do think, though, that because India has so much racism about color-based whatever-ism, it's a terrible thing. But in the way in which people are drawn, it's genuinely it would be weird if you drew my dad to look like my mom, because I'd be like, but his name is, what's going on? That's why I'm very confusing in India, because I'm tall like a North Indian, but my surname is South Indian. People meet me and say, what's going on? Literally. It's, you know, and that's, I think, a function of the fact that the subcontinent has so many different people and races, and we won't discriminate, but we're kind of like, you're able to poke fun about the differences between you that are along cultural, language, food, religious lines, because there's an understanding that you're all from the same place. Which is why, you know, when people go off to the deep ends in India and say, this is a Hindustan, it's only for Hindus, you're like, you're crazy. And, you know, someone take these people out. I mean, I don't mean that like in a bad way, just take them out of the room. You know? That's why it's so anomalous. You have 80% of a billion people are Hindu, and yet we find it anomalous if someone says this is Hindustan. Unless you're one of the people who thinks, like the super white guys who think that America is for white Christians. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. It's like, what are you talking about? Anyways, so that's my story.
Now it's scoring time, Sindhu. Do you have some categories for us?
I do. And I want you to remember, as I read you out these categories, that in some cases you can give full points, 5 out of 5. Right?
We both folded
our hands. I know. But you know what? Just so you know. So the first category is points for supernatural.
This is a classic category. It's been somewhat foisted upon this story.
It's going to be very hard to give full points for a story in which I think nothing supernatural happens.
No, nothing supernatural happens. And I can say that I could have argued to you that you should give me points if we knew who the Beals prayed to. But we didn't know. Well, no one knows.
In the version I read, it said the goddess Kali
from the Temple of Doom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm glad.
You've nearly got a point just from the Indiana Jones reference there. But you're shaking your head.
Well, because for two reasons. One is I, by and large, discourage people from getting their chief education about Hinduism from Indiana Jones.
Okay.
And the second is, this is a pet peeve of mine. The Beals, you know, there's been such an effort in modern times to sort of homogenize them into the larger acceptable strands of faith that the subcontinent has, that then now in this story, whichever one you read, the Beals were praying to Kali. The Beals were not Hindus. They might have been praying to some goddess, or they might have been praying to a tree. We don't know. I hate losing, let me tell you that. But I'm willing to forego points on this.
You made a very persuasive case for 0 out of 5.
Yeah, well, because I just can't do that, like in all good faith. You know, I can't do that to the Beals. So it wasn't Kali, and we don't know what they were praying to, and it wasn't supernatural. And I just think that for my earnest honesty, you should give me at least 1 point. I mean, seriously.
I'm looking to you, James, because I'm a soft touch.
You're English. I'm sure I can, if I tried hard enough, I'd guilt you guys into this.
I can't give you a point for supernatural.
Fine.
Okay. Well, so no white guilt creeping into
that. No, honesty is the best policy. Whoever said that's an idiot. Next one is names or naming.
Oh, yeah.
The names, well, I would pause before attempting to pronounce any of the names.
Akbar? No. We're going to say it the right way. Okay, I'm going to say it, you're going to say it after me. Akbar.
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 Yeah, and it's Akbar, not Akbar. Akbar.
Akbar.
Yeah. Jahapana.
Jahapana. So that's Emperor of the Universe.
Of the Universe.
Like He-Man, is it?
He was a master.
He was a
master.
It's just slightly different.
Yeah. When you're a master, you have to work it. This guy was just emperor. Boom. Babar.
Babar.
Babar. Bheel.
Bheel.
With a B. Bheel.
Bheel. See, are we pronouncing it correctly, or are we doing an impression of you? Because I'm not sure.
You're pronouncing it correctly.
Okay.
If you do an impression of me, you're pronouncing it correctly. I mean,
you might have a terrible accent for all I
know. No, my Hindi is extraordinary.
Okay.
Just so you know, that's just that. But also, every time I say an English name, I am in a way impersonating all of you. Think about that.
It's like when you see, like, when someone with a very strong accent goes and teaches English abroad, and all the people they've taught have got, like, a Scouse accent or something.
Yeah.
Any foreign players that play for Liverpool teams, they speak Spanish like Scouse. It's so weird.
I mean, and I, you know, the idea that if you were saying it correctly, you're impersonating me, the only person that then would be not weird would be my mother, who, again, listens to an English name and then just says whatever the thing is that she thinks that sounded like. You know, so I have a friend from Israel whose name is Shani, and her husband is Johnny, Jonathan. My mother always calls them Shani Johnny. How is Shani Johnny? I'm like, her name's Shani. Huh, Shani? And she calls most Western women that she doesn't know well, Jenny.
Just to be safe.
Jenny.
That's a good name.
Jenny.
Because
I'm a foreigner, I feel like if you're going to say my name the way I say it, then you can't worry that it's racist, because that's how I say my name.
So I think what you're saying there is me and James can't be racist.
Not to me about my name. Oh, if you were sitting here...
If you will, carte blanche, which is probably inappropriate.
I don't think I could say that.
Used originally.
Yeah, you know, but when it comes to racism, I think that context is very important. You know, to subtle racism and things like that. Like, out and out racism, no. But subtle racism, I think, especially on the circuit, I found that people are so nervous. And it's like, dude, what is the context? And also, this fear that you're going to say something subtly racist, it's very, it takes a lot of agency away from the listener. I think it's very important for the health and the development of both more sensitive thinking, as it is coming about now in our time. You know, we're more sensitive to people, that alongside maintaining comedy, that's the thing that's very important, is how much does content play a role versus context. It's a very important thing, because you can't go down the, you know, you can't go down the snowflake way. You can't.
It's slippery, for one thing.
It's very, very slippery. And
it's very white.
There's so many snowflakes in India at the moment as well. Naming.
After all this racism, let's go back to judging how silly these four are.
Yes, let's do it. Babar, Akbar, Jahapana, Bheel.
I
like it because we've got Akbar, which made me think of Admiral Akbar from Star Wars. We've got Babar, which made me think of Babar the Elephant from my childhood. And we've got Bheel, which made me think of Ian Bheel from EastEnders. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 5.
Yes!
I endorse that also, because we got a little free pass that we are not racists.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Literally one word.
Well still.
Yeah. In this podcast, for the names we've gone through, these two are not racist.
Yes.
You guys, yes.
5 out of 5 not racist. Putting that in my book.
All right. The next category is called commit to the bit.
And what do you mean by that? Well,
first of all, as a comic, you know, when you get on stage and you say something and they don't laugh, you think, this is funny, I need to get this across. So you stick with that bit. That is what Babur did when Akbar let that arrow go too early and he missed the stag and he said, this is a terrible thing. And Babur said, everything happens for the best. And then Akbar was in pain and said, how dare you say that? Look at my thumb. I'm bleeding. It's a flesh wound. It bleeds a lot. I'm not sure he said that, but he might have because they do bleed a lot. And I'm in pain. At that point, Babur doubled down. He committed to the bit. He said, so it is, my lord, but still, everything that happens happens for the best. That is some guts.
And he didn't get a laugh even then.
No, and dire things happened to him.
I mean, he literally nearly died, not quite on stage, but
he literally much worse death. And then right at the end when he gets found and Akbar says, I'm so sorry, will you ever forgive me? He triples down because he says, oh my lord, you don't ask me that, because at the end of the day, the fact that you left me here meant everything happens for the best. And Akbar again got annoyed. He had some anger management issues and said, are you trying to shame me for what I did? He said, no, my lord. Everything happens for the best, because if I'd gone with you, blah, 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 I'd be the sacrifice.
So it was sort of like a shiny dog story with a really long setup.
Yeah.
And then finally he hits him with the punchline after the whole
thing. Well, he hit him right in the beginning and it didn't go down. He was like, no, I believe in this bit. I'm sticking to it. I mean, to the point where I would give my life up for this bit. None of us, we're all three comics, have ever said, I'm going to do this bit to the point where I might actually lose my actual physical life. That's called committing to the bit.
Definitely. I think it would have been sweeter though if at the end he said everything happens for a reason, and then the original deer came up with like a load of like donuts on its antlers. It's a snack. Like, everyone had a great time and then freeze framed.
And also never forget, never confuse everything happens for the best with everything happens for a reason.
Oh.
Those are two very different things.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Is there a different story where Baba nearly dies for insisting?
No, because as my mother said to me, what is this thing people are saying here in Europe and America? Everything happens for a reason. Of course it happens for a reason. Nothing happens for non-reason. We are not dead in a vacuum. I'm not sure what that even means, but you get the gist.
I think it's a high score for commit to the bit.
Yeah, totally. Definitely 5 out of 5.
Oh, my God.
You are on a roll.
I am on a roll.
The
next category is the last category, and it is called pernickety.
And who is pernickety in the story?
Who do you think? Who do you think lived in the forest and was running around naked with not even what my father would call loincloths? With not even loincloths. And the women...
Loincloths.
Yeah, and the women were simply bare-breasted.
Simply.
They're out there, these mystery people that you're going to guess. Out there in the forest with literally, they're just forest people. They themselves are almost naked. They don't come across the, you know, mainland, mainstream guys to give for sacrifice, which is a huge deal to them. Then they get one, and he's not really just anyone. He's like super well dressed. He's crazy angry, so very animated. So obviously in the, you know, robust health. He's the right kind of sacrifice. He has one little scratch on his thumb, and they're like, oh, can't believe, oh. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, really?
So it's the Peels, obviously. It's the Peels, I'm guessing.
Beals.
Ian Beale.
Ian Beale. I mean, if you needed something really badly and it had one tiny thing, if you're waiting for a meal and it was super expensive and you couldn't get your money back and there was an eyelash on the edge of the plate, would you throw it away?
No, I was just remembering the other day that I did ring up Nestle because I got a...
Nestle?
Because I had a Kit Kat without any wafer in it.
How good does that sound?
It is actually amazing.
I was going
to
say.
But I heard that if you
ring them up to thank them.
They give you lifelong supply of cat.
They're going to give you a box. And I rang up and I put a voice on.
What was the voice? Please put it on, I beg you.
Indian accent, I think. Yeah. I remember.
I think there's something a little bit. I've had a kick.
Own voice.
Someone who would phone Nestle if they were you.
Yeah, well, I started off my own voice and then I clocked that my wife was laughing at me, so I pretended I was doing it for a joke. It's more out of concern for you because there might be something wrong with the factory. Is there any sort of reimbursement? And they sent me a check.
A check for how much?
50p.
Who
posts a 50p check?
Nestle.
You know who's pernickety? Nestle.
Nestle. Nestle. That's insane.
printed out and everything, like not even like a written, like proper, like you know, shop check. You know, when you get it from.
All right, where are we on pernickety?
I think they were very pernickety.
4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. So I just want to say I am 14 out of 20.
That's not bad at all, considering the thing that you've written out there.
Yeah, 14 out of 20. Just want to see my percentage. Go ahead.
Are you doing the maths?
I'm doing the maths. I want to see how much 14 out of 20 percentage is.
What you do there?
What is that?
70%, I think.
Yeah, not bad. 75 is an A, but that's fine. I'll live with 70. Can you tell I'm from a South Asian background? By any, you can't say it, but you're thinking it. Hey, Alistair, ABK, hey, James. Just a quick thing to say. I started listening to the episode, the Loreman episode, so nice, until I started speaking, and it was not so nice anymore, because I've been calling Birbal Babar when I was talking about it with you. Why would I make that mistake? I mean, it's sacrilege. If my mother ever hears it, she's going to beat me up completely. And that's not easy, given that she's 5'4 and I'm 5'10, but she'll do it. Basically, look, man, I think I was tired, and I think I was thinking about Akbar's dad, because I started explaining who Akbar is, and then I said Babar. And by the way, Babar is not even Akbar's dad. Babar is just the guy who started the Mughal Empire, just the guy. Forget all that. Listen, it's Birbal. This story is about Akbar and Birbal. And huge apologies to your listeners who have probably been, I don't know, vomiting into a trash can listening to this rubbish from me. Please, please, please take this as an apology and as a correction. The story is about Birbal and Akbar. Thanks. Bye.
Now we have the beginning of a tongue twister in the form of a pickled parsley. I got a story from Durham.
Is it about cows? It is.
No, it's not. I just had to.
Are you just changing in your mind, changing the word cow for not cow?
Vicar. No, I was just casting my eyes down to the page before I said with confidence that there are no cows in it. No. Oh, that's my phone.
That's the old Durham cow alert. Don't forget to mention us.
It's just live updates for whatever's happening with Durham's cows. Anyway, my story for you from County Durham is the pickled parson of Sedgefield.
Brilliant. Yeah. I love it already.
It's the title sold it to me. And, yeah. And it's an extremely short niblet of a story.
Okay.
Sedgefield, of course, shot to fame because it was the constituency of popular politician Anthony Blair.
Oh.
Known popularly as Tony Blair. Now,
yeah. Whatever happened to Tony Blair?
I don't know. Anyway, that's Sedgefield. And this is the story of the Reverend Garnage, which is like carnage but with a G.
Yeah, it sounds a bit more like garnish.
Yeah,
the Reverend. A mad amount of garnish.
He was an extremely decorative parson, and he died in December of 1747, a cold winter. And the way things worked, being a sort of a vicar in those days, is that you were paid by the people in the local parish, and they would pay a tithe to you every year.
Yeah.
And that was paid around about the 20th of December. So this is extremely troubling for his wife, because he dies before the tithe is paid. And since he's dead, the tithe will go to the bishopric of Durham. And his family, her...
The bishop what of Durham?
the bishopric, which is a word we've used in the podcast before.
I can't believe I haven't called it up
no,
before.
No bleeping necessary. Bishopric, it's a word. The bishopric of Durham.
That's what she called him.
The tithes were paid to the bishopric of Durham. Basically, she's going to be penniless. And people... Vicars in the old days were quite poor anyway. That's why we have, you know, poor as a church mouse and that sort of thing. So, horrible news for her. But she comes up with a plan. And using either salt or brandy, she preserves the body of her dead husband, the Reverend, and props him up in the window for others to see for the week that she has to go in order to meet the tithe. Now, we don't know whether she used bits of string to make him wave at passers-by. We don't know if rocking around the Christmas tree was even playing while this happened. But that's what she did, and it worked. And nobody realised he was dead. She collected the tithe, and then after that, she announced the death of her husband.
from drowning in salt.
But, I mean, you could ask the question, who is penniless but can afford enough brandy to pickle a human man?
Mm.
Bad news, though. The spirit of the parson, who was a pious man, was not particularly pleased about being used in a Home Alone-style jape.
The Weekend at Bernie's-esque scam.
Yep, as hilarious as those films are, he didn't see the funny side of it. And his spirit...
Well, I'd just like to say, in Home Alone, Kevin McAllister does not animate corpses. Unless I've seen a very different version of the film Home Alone.
According to legends...
Very much the Jeffrey Dahmer of kids' movies.
According to Legends and Superstitions of Durham, 1886, the spirit of the parson infested the neighbourhood for the better part of half a century, making the nights hideous. Until, and this is the end of the story... In 1792, there was a fire in the rectory, and, quote, from that day and hour, the apparition was never more seen. So, after the building that the ghost was in burned down, it was gone. Nobody in that building that burnt down ever saw it again.
Presumably because the ghost was highly flammable because of all the brandy.
So that is a very short story of the Pickled Parson of Sedgefield. And, interesting side note, I looked into this. Tony Blair actually died just before the 1997 general election, and they pickled him in brandy.
Gordon
just
Brown.
Just to get him over the line.
The deal was that he would animate his corpse.
And yeah, he was like, I'm Tony. Please, education, vote for us.
Education, education, education. It's stuck. The tape's stuck. Scores.
The first category I have for you is names.
Yeah, well, the Pickled Priest of... Pickletown?
The Pickled Parson of Sedgefield. That's quite a good name.
Pickled Parson of Sedgefield. That's great.
It's Tony Blair, good name.
Yeah. Sullied.
I saw someone on the internet had rearranged the letters to make it...
Tony B. Liar.
B. Liar. I would not want to be the millionaire Tony Blair around about now.
Go, go. Go, Tony, go, go. Tony B. Liar. Once again, we're going to have to fork out for PRS rights for my...
Absolutely spot-on impersonation.
My wonderful song parodies.
We've got Tony Blair.
Tony Blair.
Not a great name. Sedgefield.
The Bishop Prick.
The Bishop Prick of Durham.
Yeah, I like
the Bishop
that
Prick
one.
Of Durham. Yeah.
I'm going to go large with a 3, because we don't know the wife's name.
Sorry. I did check in the book. It's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about Supernatural?
See, I fear... There's two very natural explanations for these, the apparitions, post-scam apparitions.
Yeah?
One is, it's a terrible pun, and that the spirit that infested the town was the spirit of brandy.
Ooh.
And it gave people terrible hangovers, and that's it. And that it stopped when the house burnt down and the brandy all...
Ooh, right, okay.
...evaporated and burned away.
Well, that's an interesting theory, but...
Theory two is Mrs. Pickle Parson... She didn't stop the scam. She kept going.
You think it's a hustle?
Yeah, she's going. She's doubling down. She's thinking, I'm gonna do this for a bit. I'm gonna use this reanimated corpse skills to make people think he's now a ghost. I'm gonna dress myself up as some sort of Ghostbuster and extort money.
You think it's like the Sting? Is that the whole thing? Is just a scam?
It's all scam or scamola, definitely. And she, unfortunately, her plans were thwarted when her house blew up midway through in an unsatisfactory midway through story explosion. That,
an unsatisfactory midway through story explosion.
Yeah. Well, you don't get many of them.
Yeah.
When they do, they're noteworthy. It's just it's a low 2 because we don't really know much of what he did apart from that it was bad as a ghost. He was much more fun when he was dead but not a ghost. That was the fun bit.
When
of
he
the
was
story.
Effectively a puppet.
Yeah.
And my final category, Weekend at Bernie.
Oh.
Yep. I've left the S off Bernie's to make it Weekend at Bernie.
Because the house burnt down
the
as well.
Because the parsonage burns down.
The parsonage, and there's also the animated corpse a la Weekend at Bernie's.
Weekend at Bernie, yeah.
I think 5.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be any more reanimated corpse like than reanimating the corpse of a vicar, propping him up in a church. Should have probably was he Catholic?
I'm assuming not because it's
you could have easily done the confession box scam.
Oh yeah,
just popped him in there, and they got a lot of smelly stuff in Catholic churches. You could have got a you wouldn't have needed to have pickled him.
That's true. Another reason why Catholics are not to be trusted, as I'm always saying,
because they may. Animate.
How do you know they're not a reanimated corpse puppet?
Uh-huh. been listening to Lawmen. The Lawmen are James Shakeshaft
and Alistair Beckett King. Please subscribe, rate, review, and recommend to a friend. You can tweet us at LawmenPod or email us at contact@lawmenpodcast.com to suggest stories from your area. That was Lawmen, and we are the Lawmen. Alistair Beckett King and
James Shakeshaft.
Why am I saying the and as well?
I don't know.
I'm going to do that again. Search for us in all the usual places.
And like, subscribe, leave comments on things to do with us.
Yes, please.
Live your own life with other podcasts. I'm not advertising them.
I think this bit would go better if we write the thing we're going to say before we try and say it.
Maybe.